You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
You're listening to Muses and Stuff. This is the podcast that's all about the dolls. They were the groupies, the wives, the girlfriends, and the muses who played such a huge role in rock and roll history by simply being themselves.
They were sweet, sexy, brave, and powerful. They went after what and who they wanted, and they made no apologies.
We are your hosts, Shanti and Lynx.
Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Shanti.
Hello, my darling. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Today, we are going to be talking about Pamela DeBar and Michael DeBar.
Yes, I'm so excited. They're amazing. One of the best friendships, I think, in rock and roll history. Absolutely.
I agree. We're going to be talking about rock and roll marriage. We're going to be talking about enduring friendships and why they have one of the best friendships in rock and roll and maybe even of all time.
Yes, we can all learn a thing or two from the DeBars.
Plus, we get to dedicate a whole episode on Pamela, who is just our, I don't even know, like, how have I described her?
I feel
our
like queen, she's like, yeah, or like my fairy godmother.
Our fairy godmother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So much wonderfulness has come from knowing her. And yeah, anytime we can talk about Pamela is a good time.
That's right. And I did an episode before Lynx came on as a co-host. I did an episode about Pamela and her first book right at the beginning. But it's really, I think, it's so much better to talk about her with you and to talk about Pamela with a fellow doll. Mm-hmm. And because she's ultimately what brought us all together.
Absolutely.
And so many girls see themselves in her. And so what we're going to do for this episode is look at her second book, Take Another Little Piece of My Heart, A Groupie Grows Up, which chronicles her meeting of Michael DeBar.
And their marriage.
And then the end of their marriage.
Yeah. And the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
That's right. Before we get to that, we're going to get into some good grateful, news. Groovy, groupy news. So some of those things include, this is going to be one of the last episodes for a while where it's just Lynx and I, because we have a lot of really cool interviews coming up.
Yeah, we got tons. Canadian Music Week is in a few weeks here, and we've got some media passes, and we're really excited to start going to shows and interviewing some bands.
We'll be hopping around, going to shows, seeing some old friends, seeing some old flames. And
are you excited for any in particular?
I'm excited. Definitely. I can't wait to see Repartee. They're a band from Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. And there's this woman named Meg who is the the star. She's the singer. She's everything. She's amazing. And I believe they're up for an award. Best new group, something like that. I'm really looking forward to seeing them. Dandy Warhols.
Mm-hmm.
You've Gone Blonde. 5440.
Yeah. There's some good ones.
Yeah, some good ones. And then, you know, interviewing some of them is going to be really great. Mm-hmm. Another interview we have coming up is with, I won't say her name right now, I'll leave that for a bit of a surprise, but she's my favorite Canadian rock and roll photographer.
I'm excited for this one as well.
Yeah. And then you want to go for, you want to tell them? You want to tell them who we have for, I think it'll be towards the end of May.
Yeah, absolutely. We are incredibly excited to have Michelle Overman come on. We've been chatting with her and she totally gets it. She understands what groupie truly means and she's so inspiring and fun, and it's going to be such a great conversation.
And the reason why she knows what groupie means is because she was an original.
Absolutely, she
met Steven Tyler when they were both in high school and they dated. She dated David Gilmour and she dated Robert Plant.
Yeah.
So he was married at the time. She was 19. So there was, you know, some, you know, you do what you do when you're 19 and you're with this band. Mm-hmm. But she was one of the inspirations, one of those girls for, you know, going to California. Mm-hmm. Someone told me there's a girl out there with love in her eyes and flowers in her hair. And yeah. Michelle was that girl.
Yeah, I'm so excited to hear her share some of her stories.
Absolutely. So for those of you who aren't sure maybe who Michael Debar is, he's really cool. He's got one of the best, I think, social media presences out of kind of anybody, you know, our rock and rollers,
yeah,
who were there.
He's active. He cares about the people who follow him. He writes back. He writes positive. Like, he's always sharing insightful quotes or thoughts.
Absolutely. So he's a musician. He's an actor. He's the host of Little Steven's Underground Garage on Sirius XM, the radio channel is 21, and it airs weekdays from 5 to 8 a.m. and then 9 to midnight Pacific time. And one of my guys who's actually going to be in town for CMW is a huge fan of this radio show. So I was talking to him today and I said, what do you love about it? And he's like, well, I love that he calls his fans or he tells his friends that he is their humble servant. Aww. And you're right. He absolutely does love people. He loves humanity, the planet. He's just one of those people that just wants to do better and to do good.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And you feel it. You like he's inspiring.
He is. And so we're going to tell you about his struggles with addiction, drugs, alcohol, things like that. But this is a man who's really come out on the other side. And then that's really contributed to the wonderful relationship that he has with his son and with Pamela to this day. But you can really tell that this man is like, well, I mean, I've got to ask him. And I hope that I get the opportunity to ask him about perhaps his like yoga training or his beliefs, you know, his spiritual, philosophical, those kinds of beliefs, because, you know, he, every time something happens and I maybe like want to comment on it,
mm-hmm.
even just, you know, can be anything for like what's going on or, you know, Chuck Berry's passing, like you just go on and see what Michael wrote. And he wrote it first and he wrote it more eloquently. So like I'll just, instead
just
of saying
retweet,
something,
just
I just retweet. but he says things like with his posts, like I just wrote one of his posts here. Like, my dear friends, have a wonderful weekend. You deserve it. I know how hard it is to stay positive, especially when the clouds gather around you. They will dissipate. They will be blown away by those who believe in truth. Sometimes I feel we are looking in a mirror, cracked and angular, where nothing seems to reflect who we really are. Well, I am superstitious. I love black cats. I love to walk under ladders. Most of all, I love you. Peace and action, my friends, old and new.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm doing my yoga teacher training and I was there all day and It was a pretty like heavy day on yoga philosophy, and it seems like he already has a lot of this information. I know Pamela too was big into yoga, and I know she's read the Bhagavad Gita and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
All right.
Do you want me to set the scene?
Yeah, do
of
it.
How they met? Okay.
It was 1974, right?
Yes. Okay, but I'm going to go back a little bit, and I'm going to go to 1973. So in 1973, Graham Parsons had just died, and Pamela was taking it pretty difficultly. And so, pretty difficultly. Anywho, Michael would know the answer to that. So Marlon Brando, it was also the time where there was the Marlon Brando movie theater incident where Pamela was just like losing it, drinking, I think, quite a bit, going to watch Marlon Brando movies, leaving him steamy messages on his answering machine. Yeah, calling him all the time, sending him photos, and then, like, one day he finally called back and was like, Pamela, that one. And he just, like, told her to look inside herself, and she was like, okay, well, I need to get it together. But anyway, she ended up meeting this young actor named Lane Caudell. And they were at a dinner party, and Lane showed up, and she said 30 minutes later, or she had been drinking to kind of take the edge off, and 30 minutes later, she was on his lap, and she said before everybody even left, she was already disrobing, so they got the hint, and she left, or they left. So she was kind of dating this guy, Lane, when she met Michael on the set of a movie called Arizonalism. So she was one of the main actors in the role. She was playing the role of groupie.
Mm-hmm.
I know the director was trying to get Robert De Niro to be in the movie but play the role of the sidekick. And so she had met Robert De Niro, but he was like, no thanks. And so he wasn't in that movie.
And Michael DeBar almost wasn't in that movie either.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was originally supposed to go to Keith Moon.
Oh, right. Yes. So Keith Moon was supposed to play the part of the pop star, but he ended up going missing at that time. And at that time, Pamela was having a casual-ish relationship with Keith. Yeah, she would see him when he came to town. He was very needy, fun, wild.
She has great stories about him.
Oh, she really does.
Yeah, everyone does. I mean, Keith Moon is certainly a character.
Yeah, actually, my guy that I'm telling you about, the one that's coming into town for CMW, I have a photo of Pamela and Keith. I had, and Pamela signed it to him in drag. Yeah.
Amazing.
And we gave it to him. Amazing. As a gift.
All right. So yes, on this set, they got Michael instead last minute. Thank goodness. This is a really interesting thing because it wasn't actually Pamela wasn't the groupie in this situation. It was actually Michael who was the groupie.
Yes. May I just say January 24th? 1974, it was his birthday.
Yes.
A day before my birthday, so we're both Aquarius.
All right, so this is a direct quote from Michael DeBar. I saw this stunning body in a Betty Grable bathing suit and high-heeled pumps. It was the legendary Miss Pamela of groupie fame, muse of Jim Morrison, Mick Jagger, Jimmy Page, and Keith Moon. I knew precisely who she was. She'd been a member of the GTOs, a dance troupe that Zappa discovered when they were doing backflips in three sequins and a doily. She epitomized everything I'd come to America for. Rock and roll, the turned up collar, a cigarette dangling from the lip, Elvis, Jimmy Dean. I instantly fell in love with this girl. It was that cliche of the American rocker falling in love with the American groupie. Pamela and I were married for 14 years. It was a very rough 14 years. I was addicted to drugs. I was on the road. I succumbed to every temptation known to man. I wanted to make love to the world, and I did. But we had a beautiful son, and we are still the greatest of friends.
I love it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true. They are great friends. And that's it. She had said when they met that she wasn't instantly smitten with him. No. So it was really he who was pursuing her.
Yeah.
And he went after her. He was the groupie. He had seen her in the magazines and he loved her past. And so she was dating this guy, Lane, and he was very much like, nope, you have to come with me. I want you to be with me. So he fought for her. And so she was into it. He was still married at this time, and he'd only been married for 3 weeks to a girl. So he was from England. And she just said, you know, Michael and Lane were so different. Lane was so like all American boy. Michael was this
glam, British,
you know,
rocker.
Caked on makeup from the week before. So skinny, probably weighed like 100 pounds, soaking wet. And she would say she said in her book, you know, Lane wouldn't come near me when I was on my period. Michael was a vampire. It was like day, or what was it? It was like the difference between day and Dibar or something like that. One thing that she says, though, that is so great is that she said, Michael was the first man who let me be me. In fact, he let me become me. He adored me more than anybody ever had. And since he adored me first, I got to shine like a pornographic stained glass window instead of groveling at his feet. The very reason I was unacceptable in normal formal circles was the very reason Michael fell in love with me. He loved the idea that Jimmy Page had carted me across the country. He was thrilled with my ticky-tacky titillating past, and I knew I would never have to hide anything from him. I could let my gaudy guard down and hold my head up high. It was a heavenly release.
That relief. Is just the most wonderful thing ever. I mean, that's exactly what you want.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the first night that they had spent, they stayed up all night. They, right away, drugs were involved. Pamela was not, I would say, like, compared, and definitely for her time, she was not a big drink and drug person, even though I kind of started off saying, like, she was drinking at this time because she was.
Yeah, I mean, the normal amount, it was never, she was never an addict.
Absolutely agree with that. But yeah, they stayed up all night doing cocaine, talking about Elvis. They had the same heroes, that kind of stuff, and
just
there was
bonding. And
yeah, there was one scene that they were shooting and the band was doing, like, and was doing a band scene. She was sitting on his lap and she was just like into it. You know what I mean? And the interesting thing about Michael was that, you know, he was an actor first. And so even though he was in the band Silverhead and he was in bands after, I think they were very much kind of talking about him as if he was an actor playing the role of a rock star or of a pop star.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of rock and roll is acting as well. And it is a lot about...
It's performance.
It's performance. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. So they had gotten together and, you know, he went down on her for 2 hours because they couldn't consummate anything. Because this is what she said. Because his dick was about to fall off from some unutterable thing he had caught in Japan.
I think this really is an interesting thing because she also talks about what a gentleman he is for not passing it along and, you know, being upfront about it. Hey,
chivalry isn't dead.
Yes, exactly. And it really shows you like the differences in the times. I mean, that's certainly not something that would happen today. People are definitely more scared, I guess, of things like that. I mean, this was before HIV and everything. So the worst was like a visit to the doctor.
Yeah.
A more innocent time.
Yeah, agreed. So she was still with Lane. She was doing things like hanging out with Woody Allen. They went to go see The Exorcist together. And apparently Woody Allen was just like cackling and cracking jokes the whole time.
I love that.
She was going between Lane and Michael. Meanwhile, like, Keith Moon was still in the picture.
Yeah. And he was still married, so I mean, they were discovering each other and deciding whether to move forward.
And they decided that they were going to, and they decided that they were going to get, so after being together for a little while, they decided they were going to get married, and they did so in Catherine James's backyard, which was probably the cutest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, speaking of Catherine James, so I've talked about her a few times. She's one of my favorite muses of all time. She's so beautiful.
I agree.
To this day, I would just love to get my hands on her. But Michelle is going to go to LA and visit both Catherine and Pamela. And the three of them are all going to catch up. And so we're going to talk to Michelle after that visit. So it'll be wonderful.
Yes. So, yes, they're living in LA now. They've just been married.
Mm-hmm.
This was 77, I think they got married. It was like 3 or 4 years after. Okay. Michael had to get a divorce first.
Yeah, transatlantic divorce.
Pamela did go to England with him, I believe, and met his parents.
That comes a little bit later.
No, they were already married then?
I believe that she met his parents when they had Nikki. That was the first. No, she met her. She met his dad first.
Yeah, and she
in a bar. But the dad had like a young girl.
Yes, and they were staying with his mom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
And just a little piece of trivia. Apparently, Michael is a marquis. He's got a title.
Oh, yeah. And he was like joking with her, like, I'm going to make you the next. I don't know what it was.
I don't know.
Countess?
Maybe? Yeah. he was a count at the time. And he would later become a marquis. I wonder if he's a marquis now.
Michael, are you a marquis? We'll ask you.
Yeah. Okay. That just makes him like all the more fabulous. Like he couldn't be any more fabulous than you find out there's like this title in front of his name. You're like, wow. It fits him.
So
yeah, married in 77, and then in 78 came Nikki.
Okay. Before they had Nikki, he like the cocaine and alcohol addiction was just out of control.
Yes.
And, you know, Pamela was just kind of trying her best, just trying to, like, you know, the fixing mode, the just, well, as long as I just support and help and just, like, maybe he'll get better. And
maybe show I'm loving enough, maybe if I try to show him that being at home is fun, too. Yeah. And Yeah.
So he went missing for 32 hours once.
That's scary.
And so he came home vacant and disheveled. And it was when he admitted to his drug and alcohol addiction, you know, got down on his knees, she hugged him.
Mm-hmm.
Then Nikki was conceived.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. So now that brings us to, Nikki is...
September 30th, 1978.
Mm-hmm.
Nick came around. It wasn't for a few years before Michael officially quit drugs, though.
That's right. So she thought, you know, maybe things would change once we have the baby, but it really didn't.
Mm-mm.
And it's, you know, something interesting about Pamela that I thought was, you know, she was so, like, she did so much yoga, and so she was so ready to have this baby. Her water broke at one of the Zappa kids' birthday parties, so Gail drove her to the hospital. And
that's so fitting, since Pamela took care of
all of the Zappa children.
Yeah.
Totally. And like, and you know, Gail knew like what to do because she'd had three or
many.
Four? Three or four of them. No, I think she was pregnant with her fourth too. Wow. I think they were pregnant at the same time together. So Michael continued on with his habits. Oh, what I was going to say was Pamela didn't want any drugs or anything to numb the labor, because this is so true to Pamela's spirit and who she is. She wanted to feel everything.
Mm.
Good or bad, she wanted her baby to come into this world just totally.
What do you think you would do?
I would try my best to just do my best and do it naturally. And I think with all of the yoga and the meditation and the
you hope you're prepared, right?
Then I would like to give it a good, honest try.
I'm pretty sure I would just go for the drugs right away.
Give me the drugs.
Yeah.
So Michael just, he kept on doing what he was doing. She didn't bother him, and then it was too late. So at this point, Michael's band, Detective, she said, had hung up their badges. Mm-hmm. And he went back to acting, but she said it was quite difficult because how many jobs were available for this sort of, you know, tall, skinny, blonde-haired, ringlety English man in LA. So
it was a struggle.
Yeah.
But they did love each other. It was just hard.
Yeah.
So they were both really young here too still.
Yep, she was I think around 30.
Mm-hmm. I think they're also a good example of how, you know, growing up in the 50s, especially women are sort of trained, if you want to put it that way, into like your role is wife, your role is mother. And so many women go into that expecting that to somehow be total fulfillment, not realizing you still have you, and like your life isn't over then.
Right. And even though she was a sexual pioneer, you know what I mean? She did pine for that traditional, you know, marriage. She saw her parents' marriage.
Yeah, when you're raised in that.
And she idolized Gail Zappa and saw what she and Frank had. And, you know, I can relate to that. And I can see like some beautiful rock and roll marriages and, you know, think about how romantic they must be. Like when I did Catherine James's episode with Joe Forte, and like he's married, and I can just imagine, you know, the way that he writes songs and kind of where he lives and what brings him inspiration. And my friend Trevor Murphy, who has the Halifax Is Burning podcast, he's married, and I used him as a great example when he and I did the Gail Zappa episode. So there are some really, and then, you know, Emma Tillman with Josh Tillman, like there's a great one. Like, and I genuinely hope that it lasts because it seems so beautiful. So I can see it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's funny though, because when she decided to marry Michael, she had to tell, like, you know, her on-off flings. So Keith Moon wasn't happy about it. Mm-mm. He wasn't happy that he wouldn't be able to see Pamela anymore. And it's funny because if for whatever reason I decided like, oh, this is the person that I want, that I decide that I want to be monogamous with, because I'm not monogamous, and I'm coming to realize that actually it seems like if I'm gonna put a label on it, what I'm doing is polyamorous and polyamory, because I have three, I would maybe argue four or five.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wouldn't even argue four or five. I would say like three, but five in total of men who really care about me.
Yeah.
And
who come, you know, in and out of your life when
in and out in different ways, but are then always kind of there. And then some of them are there physically more often, or some of them are there emotionally more often. And if for whatever reason I would meet somebody and it's like, oh, I don't like, I,
it's,
if that's what you want and that's what I want, then I would have some phone calls and some conversations to have, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm curious to know if that day is ever going to come. But until then, I'm having a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's wild. I never thought that I could care about so many people at one time and have so many different kinds of relationships and be cared for so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful for it. But
yeah, people have this notion, because we really are, as a society, sort of led to believe that this one true love and like true fulfillment happens when you find the one or whatever.
Yeah.
But some people don't have a one. Some people have many. And for me, I kind of feel like many is better. I mean, why limit yourself to just one? And hey, if you found that one and you're happy, I'm so happy for you. But for me, I love meeting new people. I love having new experiences. And yeah, for some people, this is the way it is for them.
And I'm sure that, you know, and I've talked about this with certain people, and the reactions are pretty interesting. Some, I get a lot of questions like, well, do they all know about each other, or what's the, like, how do you know that this guy who says that his relationship is open is actually open?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, all of them, I've known every single one of them for at least, the shortest one is 1 year.
Yeah.
one is, two of them are 3 years and one of them is 8 years.
And people might be under the illusion that you're like seeing all of them in 1 week or something. Mm. And like, that's not the case. It's
usually,
I mean, you aren't juggling like five men like every day of the week.
Right. Yeah.
It's okay. It's natural.
Yeah.
I guess that's what.
Yeah. It just like it works.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's always the funniest thing that I think about is when I was younger and my uncle would say, how are you doing? How is school? Do you have a boyfriend? Or even, do you have a boyfriend yet? And whenever my cousin Corey, my male cousin Corey, would get that question, he would say, yeah, I've got a few. Like, I've got a few girlfriends. So when I started getting, like, in university, when they started asking me that, I say, yeah, I've got a few. And so now if they've pretty much stopped asking me that question. But it's like, yeah, I've got a few.
Interesting.
Okay.
All right. So
let's move on.
It wasn't until around 1981 that Michael sort of had this epiphany about his drug use.
Yeah.
And was finally determined to go into AA and to turn his life around.
Because with the drinking and drug use also came other women and affairs. And so that did happen. And Pamela's intuition told her that it was happening. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's interesting.
And she confronted him about it.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm not asking you if you're having an affair. I'm telling you that I know.
Yeah. Be honest about it.
Yeah.
It is interesting. While Michael is having his self-discovery and building toward being healthy again, there, at the same time, their relationship was done by then.
Yeah. Nick is in preschool at this point, and he was having a really tough time.
Mm-hmm.
She was being super mom, making casseroles, you know, around the time Michael called AA. And Pamela's dad was starting to become very sick.
Oh, yeah.
OC. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the most heartbreaking but also beautiful and touching parts of the, I think, of this entire book is when she talks about her father.
Yeah, she's like us. She really adores her daddy.
Yeah, we both, Lynx and I both love our fathers so much. And, you know, without getting into it too much, you know, we both have a lot in common in terms of the, you know, what's going, like what has gone on or what is going on with our fathers. And so Pamela says this about her dad. So he had black lung. He was on oxygen. He was very sick. And so this is what she said about him, which I, you know, personally can very much relate to. When someone you love is really sick, there is a constant sorrow behind everything you do. Even when great things happened, I would think, wow, isn't this wonderful? Oh, yeah, except for the fact that my daddy can't breathe.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So she was actually there with her father when he passed, mm-hmm. when he passed on. So she really helped guide him and support him into his next
realm.
His next realm, his next incantation, his next wherever it was that he was going. So she just said, you know, follow the light, daddy, go to it. And so there was a really beautiful moment in the book when she's saying goodbye to him. And it really reminded me of the time that I was in the room when my grandfather died. Uh-huh. My poppy, that this necklace that I have right here and, you know, these glasses that are right here were my grandfather's. And it was a really special and beautiful moment that I got to be there in the room when my mom was there, mm-hmm. when my grandfather's spirit left his body. And yeah, I was upstairs sleeping at my grandmother's and grandfather's because he had come home from the hospital to die. Yeah. He was ready.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to do it at home. And I just woke up in the middle of the night and I heard my mom. I don't know what it was that I heard, but I came down. She was sitting by his bed and he took his last breath and we were there together.
I'm glad you guys got to, you know, have each other there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you don't like, you know, he was an old man and he was ready and and
it's sad for the people who are left behind because we have the memory and we miss them, but it's not always a sad thing for, I mean, it happens to all of us.
That's right. Yeah. So once her father had passed, Pamela talked to her mother and said, you know, I'm ready to write the story. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to talk about the boys in Led Zeppelin and Jim Morrison and Mick Jagger. And now that, like, you know,
it's time to share.
Yeah. And I think that, like, you know, she didn't want to do it while her father was alive. And so she began writing her manuscript. So, and I believe she started writing it still before. So her and Michael aren't divorced at this point.
No.
No, but they're having a lot of problems. She's taking care of everything, the bills, the house, the meals, the pets. She said, you know, he's very excessive, self-absorbed. She didn't say this, but I mean, kind of get it that he's very selfish. And she saw herself as a victim. So, yeah, so her book, she finished her manuscript. Michael was on tour, and by this point, she's about 38.
Yes. They, when Michael got sober, they were still together, but they were apart. They didn't officially get divorced until 91, but for, like, many years before that, they were separated, but still working on building a different relationship, a friendship, a co-parenting. They still definitely wanted to be in each other's lives, and they still cared about each other and supported each other through things like this.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I think Nick really kind of kept them together in a way. And sometimes I wonder, you know, if Patty Boyd would have, like, she wanted to, been able to have children child. With George, if their relationship would have either stayed or if it would have been different. And
I think it absolutely would have been different. I mean,
yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Children change everything.
So when she was really realizing, like she said, that her marriage was a fraud, and really coming to grips with what was happening, you know, Michael said something like, "We've been together so long, we know each other so well. Desire fades," and I can't imagine how that would feel to feel that. I would be, you know, I'm almost like scared to enter in a monogamous relationship, and then, you know, 15 years later somebody say those kinds of words to me, because oh my god.
I mean, I think it's true though, even people who stay together for 50 years, there's going to be probably years where the desire isn't as strong as it was, and then maybe something happens that brings it back. And I don't think desire can stay on fire for.
It's true, 20, and 30, that's 40. Why I think maybe some people are more open to opening their relationships as well. Mm-hmm. So people,
you can still
in
love someone
in marriages, yeah. Like, and I mean, no, I know from experience that people who are either in open relationships, who have girlfriends or wives, you know, make it pretty clear, like, these are my primary partners, and but we have this kind of agreement or that kind of agreement, and then they get to have fun when they come here, but then they get to go home and the relationship is actually better.
Yeah.
You know, they feel better, or they feel like they've got something, and then they can take that in with them. And you know what? It's just like, I feel, you know,
it works
for
some.
God's work. I'm really just helping people stay together. And
it all depends on the person. It works for some and it doesn't work for others. You have to make that decision yourself.
Absolutely. So this was a really bittersweet time, because at this point, her book becomes a bestseller.
Yes.
The I'm with the Band, Confessions of a Groupie, is a bestseller. MTV is wanting to interview her. Rock radio stations are chasing her. She said a lot of them wanted me to be weighed down with regret and remorse.
Fuck that.
Fuck that. Yeah, so she was on Larry King, and she was on the Today Show.
Just did all the rounds.
Yeah. So a lot of them were, you know, asking questions like, did Jimmy Page use his whips on you? The answer is no. Was Mick Jagger a good kisser? I can tell you that the answer was yes.
Yes.
I definitely asked those. And then she says this. Once in a while, I even got to go deep, explaining how girls from my generation felt caught between the 50s and the 60s, confused as to which way to go. I popped the pill on the Sunset Strip and searched for my identity through rock and roll, a women's liber in my own right. As brave, new, liberated females, we were supposed to go out and claim what we wanted, right? What I wanted was to take care of a man who played music, someone who might even be able to yank out my lurking creativity. Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's just like we talked about earlier with that 50s ideal of marriage. It is hard to realize that's not the way it is for most people. Marriages, especially when addiction is a major player.
Yeah.
So they.
Yeah, we'll get back. I definitely want to talk about addiction and stuff like that. And definitely in regards to our next couple of episodes, because it's gonna fit in so nicely. But we'll get to that in a second. Another thing that I really liked that she said was, always some of the public adored me. This, you're gonna like this part. Thwarted rock dollies who glommed on to my past like it was their own. Girls who told me I spoke their minds for them. Guys who wished they had been there. And always, another part of the not-so-adoring public saw a scarlet letter, a raised, searing welt in the center of my forehead. Shame, shame, shame.
Jeez.
Yeah, Suzanne Summers actually asked her how many times she had got the clap.
Oh my God.
And if she stood on street corners waiting to meet rock stars.
What?
Yeah, on air, and on a talk show. And so Pamela was just like, yeah, I just waited on the corner of Sunset and Vine for Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, and Jimmy Page to walk by. Like, no, that's not how that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's true. You know, these, she's talking about the dolls there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, Pamela is experiencing this new success with her book. Michael is getting his shit together, and he's booking lots of TV, and he sort of really became a pretty well seen actor in like the late 80s, early 90s, especially on TV.
Oh yeah, definitely. So Michael DeBar is completely sober, still is to this day.
Yep, since 81.
And what has kind of been so cool about this process has been, you know, looking up, you know, going from like Pamela and, you know, going to, and then seeing Michael and seeing what Michael is doing, and even, you know, then searching like, well, who's he dating? And he's dating this like amazing woman named Britta, who has this things. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It might be Brita. You know, she has this thing called Pilates with Brita, and it's very much of like holistic wellness. She's very strong, very cool, very into plants, saving the environment, as is he, which then is going to lead us really nicely into when we talk about Alice Carbone's book, Sex Girl. And Alice Carbone is the wife of Ben Montench, who is the piano keyboard player in Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And the two of them are also sober. So Alice Carbone had a lot of issues with addiction, you know, sex and drugs and issues with food.
If there's a lot of ex addicts who really do, once they're sober, begin a very healthy lifestyle and start caring about what they put into their bodies, what they put out into the world.
Right.
Maybe it's almost like having a death of the old you and this rebirth of this new being. But it seems to be a very reoccurring theme.
That's a really nice way to put it. And that's it. This reoccurring theme of not only are these people recovering from all of these things, and you know, we can see why Michael had all of these issues. Like, if you read the book, like, I'm not going to talk shit about his parents here, but if you read the book, you can really see what kind of people they were and what kind of the damage that they caused to him.
Yeah,
right?
And so instead of him just randomly become something, like,
that's it.
Everyone has a history,
and it's damaging yourself. Yeah. Right. And it's just hurting yourself. And instead of like taking it on other people and hurting other people, I mean, he did hurt Pamela, but because of his addiction, he hurt himself. And you know, one thing is that even, you know, to this day, you know, 2017, the drugged out rock star is not cool. No. That's not what we're looking for. That's certainly not what I'm looking for. No. And you know, all of these guys that I've mentioned to you, all of them are very smart. One of them does like hardly drinks, is mm-hmm. like, you know, they all like stay away from drugs. They're all very smart and together people and men. And it's just not, that's that when we do see some of those like off the rails rock stars, like, it's not cute, it's not romantic. In fact, the ones who I'm most attracted to are the ones who are very, like, you know, looking for deep spirituality and like real, like looking like, as we said at Michael right at the beginning, when the quote that I read first off, truth. Mm-hmm. Looking for truth, you know, looking to find liberation, freedom, like getting away from suffering. And I know that's exactly what Father John Misty, he just released his new album. And I tweeted at him today and I was like, might I recommend that you take a yoga teacher training course? Because I really think it's going to give you what you're looking for, which is essentially enlightenment and liberation. Because it's like, and, you know, we're reading this book by, or not, we're not totally reading it, but we're studying it by Patanjali, and it's like only the people who are interested in like getting away from their suffering, you know, just mm-hmm. like sick of it. When you just get sick of it, you get sick of the drugs, the alcohol, whatever, that they really then go on to find their true nature, which is
and
pure, free forever.
Speaking of that, one of the things I really love about this book, Pamela's second book, is that, as you said, while going through it, she felt she was the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And through going to therapy and talking about it, and she realized, like, I'm not solely a victim, just like Michael isn't solely an abuser, or, you know, she really takes responsibility for not, or for playing a part that she thought she was meant to play, as opposed to speaking up, or like, as you were saying, she would try to be like the supportive wife who didn't nag, or who didn't want to ruin the image of the perfect wife by taking a more active part in trying to fix, or trying to, I don't know how to put it.
But if you speak up and put your foot down and go, I'm not going to deal with this shit, then you run the risk of maybe them then saying, okay, fine, and like walking out on you.
Yeah.
So maybe just being like, well, what if I stand up then, and then I'm not going to be able, then they're going to leave me.
Exactly.
And, but like, I get it too. Like, I used to do that. I actually used to think that the guys who were the, you know, who needed the caring and the healing and the help, that I could fix them, that I could, yeah. Oh, I got it for you. Like, I've cleaned, you know, boyfriends' like houses and rooms before, because if they just came home to a nice house, then they would see, then oh, she's so,
yeah,
you know, it's crazy. It was so young, yeah. But like,
yeah, life, everyone goes through that. And in her book, she really discusses like going from groupie to to perfect wife to like realizing like, wait a minute, like this isn't perfect. And I have to take responsibility for what I do or what I don't do in my life. And it wasn't until she started to take control of her life and, you know, write and start creating her own self.
Mm-hmm.
And just like with Michael, like creating his own self and getting sober and everything, were they able to take their relationship and turn it into this beautiful friendship that it is now?
Right. And so it's the groupies who have found an identity outside of just being this person's wife or this person's girlfriend or whatever, and then really owned their story holistically right from the beginning and mm-hmm. really unraveled the onion and seeing where, what, how, and also, but just also really, really loving it and, mm-hmm. and not regretting it.
No.
And all these kinds of things that then they were able to find their true selves and their worth and their creativity instead of getting it from someone else, instead of getting it. Yeah.
And that goes for every human being. It's not just a groupie rock star thing. It's everyone, especially like from your 20s to your 30s, I think like it really is a time where it's like a trial and error. Is this working for me? Maybe not. Like, let's try this. Like, what if I do this? What if I open myself to this? And amazing things can happen when you open yourself up and you learn from your mistakes and pay attention, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, in the 90s, they began building up this incredible friendship.
Because, when you're in it, and I think we can agree and we can say, well, I've experienced this, where you have an amazing, profound, close relationship with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, it doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're taught to believe that if a relationship ends, then it was an unsuccessful relationship. And it's actually Dan Savage who says, just because a relationship has ended or a romantic relationship has ended does not mean it was an unsuccessful relationship.
No.
So just because, you know, my parents' marriage ended after 31 years, mm-hmm. because my father got sick, does not mean that it was an unsuccessful marriage. And that's, that was one thing that I've told my family as we were kind of getting into this. And just because my relationship with so-and-so ended, well, that's what it was supposed to be at that time. And
exactly.
Then when you get distance from it and you step away and you get to look at it, then maybe you come back later and you go, you know what? And I've had a lot of those experiences where either they've reached out to me or I've reached out to them and we go, okay, actually, this is what I learned from it. Now that the wounds have healed and closed up, like there's always going to be those, like the little bit of the scar that's there. But for the most part, with the exception of one of my exes, we are friends. We are on good terms. Actually, one of them is coming over in 30 minutes. He's staying with me for 3 days. He's sleeping on that couch because it's just friends. He's not one of those five. But he's one of my best friends of all time. And I cannot wait to see him. And
Pamela is really good at maintaining relationships.
She's the best.
Not just with Michael, but Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith are a great example. I mean, she truly got her heart broken there and felt betrayed, and she was able to still carry loving feelings for these people and turn that into a beautiful friendship. And she's still friends with both of them today, too.
Yeah, that's true. And I remember there was one day where she posted on Facebook and she was just, I don't know if she made it up, but it was just like, it was one of your, it's like, it's hug your ex day dolls. So she was hugging one of her ex-boyfriends and she's like, go hug an ex. And I was like, okay. But it's really nice. You know, like, I really like that you can pretty much call up any one of like the guys that I've ever dated or had, whatever kind of relationship you want to call it when you were a groupie. And they'll say, I love her. Mm-hmm. We had a great time. This is what we got. It didn't work out because of this. Whatever,
speaking of calling up, I have this really cute memory. Me and another doll, Allison, who's in the UK right now.
Hi, Allison.
We went to Niagara Falls with Miss P. We picked her up in Buffalo, and
that's so cool.
Yeah, it was so much fun. We went to this they had this like rock and roll wax museum there, and it was filled with like all of Miss P's exes and flings, and it was just it was so much fun like going through that. And
that must have been wild.
Yeah, I think she like took a picture of the Zeppelin once and sent it to like Robert Plant, because like they had them in silly outfits and everything. And when we were in the car, that song Obsession, anyone who grew up in Canada and remembers fashion television in the 90s knows this song.
You are Inception.
Yeah.
You're my obsession.
Exactly.
Who do you want me to be to make you sleep with me?
And Michael actually wrote that song. And I remember she was just so excited when it came on the radio. She was like, oh my God, like, I can't believe it's playing here. And we told her about fashion television, and like everyone here knows that song. And she like immediately got out her phone and started like texting Michael to tell him, and she was just so excited.
I love when that happens. Yeah. Like when that happens, like when we're in the car or something, the song comes on, it always gives you a little bit of hey.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always really nice.
And it was just so lovely to see like the joy in her just from hearing a song.
Miss P, we love you so much. And like, we really learned, I know, you know, I was a bit heavy on the love for Michael, but you know that it's, I'm just saying, like, it was a good choice, and I get it, and I see it, and I love you so much. I do want to just mention this one story towards the end of the book and towards the end of this podcast episode that is so amazing. So her book had come out, mm-hmm. bestseller, was doing great. She got invited to Bob Dylan's birthday party.
Bob
invited her.
This is a great story.
The first person I ran into was Roy Orbison, all in black with serious sunglasses on. There's Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne, Deborah Inger, Joycey, Carol, various cool musicians. Hip record business types, George Harrison. So apparently George said to Bob Dylan, Bob, have you read that wonderful book of Pamela's? I'm not in it, unfortunately. So yeah, she said like she couldn't believe it. And yeah, you know, George had said to her, we've met a few times, haven't we? And
I love, like, even after the book has come out and everything, she still gets that that rush when you meet one of your idols, especially if they already know about you and are a fan of yours.
Bob Dylan said that he liked her book.
And it's just like with Marianne Faithfull, I told you, with Bob Dylan, where the roles got reversed once Marian had put out her album, and it went from in the 60s, like her sitting down with Bob and listening to his album, to Bob coming over and sitting down and listening to hers. And these men who these women are fans of end up becoming their fans.
Yeah.
It's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I just love that Michael was always her fan, her number one fan.
Her number one fan. And as she calls him, you know, still to this day, her sweet soulmate. Mm-hmm. She says they're more like blood relatives now.
Yeah.
And they are 100% there for each other.
And I imagine with Nick, too, like, they must just have the greatest time. And it's nice to know there are people who can spend family time together and not only get along, but like have a great time. Yeah, they're just so positive. They're wonderful.
Yeah, lots of love to all of you Dibbars. Thank you for being there for us and always being so kind and welcoming us into your family of
and
sorts.
inspiring us
to do our own thing, to be creative and to find it within ourselves, and to celebrate our rock and roll past and present, and to continue to do it, but also to just really find that like love and passion, the commitment to doing better, just
and
within
celebrate
ourselves.
All relationships,
yeah,
and try to take the positive and leave the negative behind. And
yeah, and so that's what I'm doing with all of my exes, celebrating the positive, leaving the negative behind, and just saying, you know, thank you to every single one of you, because I know some of them listen. I don't know how many, if always. Either way, it's just like, thank you so much. And that's why we're like, even the negative, mm-hmm. we don't talk shit.
No.
So it's like nobody ever had to be worried or anything. Mm-hmm. And any of the kind of stories that we want to share that might be racy or really romantic or that's really going to give personal details, it's not coming for another like years, right?
Because
like we're saying, things need a chance to breathe. You need perspective.
You do.
Outside of it.
Yeah.
Time. Like we were talking, you know, Serinda Fox's book.
Yes.
How different it could have been if she would have just taken the time to heal before she put some of that stuff down in words.
Exactly.
So anything we do, it's going to be with love. It's going to be in gratitude. It's going to be because those experiences have made us who we are now, and to be so young and have these lessons and know this, and to just be, just to have been so lucky to have all of this love for us, these fun experiences, sexy, sweet, sad sometimes, heartbreaking, all of it, it's all good, and I would not change any of it.
Exactly. And right now, we want to celebrate all the women and men who came before us, who we're learning from, who whose stories deserve to be told.
That's right. Okay.
This is great.
Okay. Well, why don't we tell our lovely listeners where they can find us online and where they can see those new photos that we had done, our duo photos.
Did we mention that earlier?
If we didn't, then we're going to say it again. Thank you, Michael Meehan, for the beautiful photos that you took of Lynx and I.
And go check them out. We're so happy with them. And you can find us on Twitter at Shanti and Lynx. And you can find us on Instagram at Muses and Stuff.
Muses and Stuff Podcast.
And
Facebook. Yeah. And we love you all so much. Thank you so, so much for listening. Please feel free to send us any stories that you have, any questions, comments, thoughts.
Yeah, we love hearing from you.
We love hearing from you. And we're really excited to share with you some great things coming up in the next couple of weeks.
You'll be hearing a lot from us.
You're going to be hearing a lot from us, especially during CMW. We're probably going to be releasing a few things a couple of times a week. So,
yeah.
Take care, everybody, from your humble servants, Shanti and Lynx. Namaste.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.